Welcome to Modcast, a Civilization podcast focused on game modding. Rob, R8XFT.
Vice Virtuoso.
Narad.
VS.
Welcome to Modcast 72 with me, Rob, R8XFT. With me today are...
Vice Virtuoso.
Narad the Forgiven.
VS.
Fantastic. So, how are you all?
Oh, I'm doing good. Great.
Got a few things to discuss today then. We were talking earlier about the three of the main modders, weren't we? With Sukrutat, with JFD, and also Luigi. So they've brought out quite a few mods since we last all spoke. Has anybody seen any of them at all or played any of them?
I've been keeping on top of them as much as I could. I have not yet played JFD's Canada, but I've played through his Norway, some of his Rome leaders, and spent some time in a Soviet co-op game with Stalin from JFD and Liuji's Grand Columbia.
And how did that go?
It went very well. I definitely tried to be as communistic as possible. With Stalin, I eschewed all religion, went completely for production, and brought up the religion in the back with Columbia. It was quite fun to kind of do a role-play style game that way.
Yeah. I had the opposite experience with Sukrutat's Ethiopia. So it was a very religious game of that. And it was one of the best games I've played, actually, for religion, because their leader, well, has been able to buy settlers and workers with faith and also trade routes.
OP.
You can also, if you've got three holy sites, then you get a free wildcard slot in whatever government you're in. And if you've got six, then you get two wildcard slots. So it's really useful, that, and I found it a really good game. And the leader was animated as well.
Oh, excellent. I have not seen that yet.
Basic animation at the moment, and I think Sukrutat's looking for somebody who can speak the language for Zari Yakob. It looks okay. It's a good bit of a move on, because it's the first time, I think, that we've seen a 3D leaderhead that works in Civ 6.
There's a bunch of new faces on the scene, anime-wise, also historical Civ-wise, that I haven't had a chance to crack open and see how good they are in terms of mod stability or design.
There's a couple of people that have sprung upon the workshop that seem to be visible anywhere else. You know, like TC, who did the removable districts.
I have to really look at the code for that one, too, because one of the things I'd like to see, wanted to try to do, is nomadic districts. Districts that move around. So removable districts, I think, would be the first step to that. Maybe you have a removable district that once you've built it the first time, then it's free.
He's actually removing the districts in, via LUA, so you could actually do that. Your only problem there is you got to keep track of what buildings were there so that you can unbuild them and then rebuild them. Creating a project that you can build, when that gets done, that triggers the LUA code. So you could probably just do it all direct from Lua, and if condition X is met, well, we're going to shift this district over to Bayer. But the problem is that, to me, that takes away the ability of the player to plan where they want things to go.
Right. Just to brainstorm a little bit with nomadic districts as a concept, I would also probably steal an idea from Civilization V, Tomatek's Sioux mod, and have a civilization like, say, the Sioux, although I wouldn't steal his thunder, right? But where you have a resource that moves around, like a buffalo resource, you make a civilization that has movable districts, and you give them the rule, though, all your districts get, I don't know, plus one or plus two towards their desired yield if they're adjacent to the buffalo. So you definitely have a completely different play style where you would be forced to move your district around and ruin your plans as you chase these buffalo that move around inside your land.
That's interesting. Yeah, I like that. Maybe there could be something where you could move a district from one city to another. You're wanting to expand maybe the frontier cities that are brand new, so waiting for them to sort of start generating the units you want to. Maybe you could have one of the back street districts, like the barracks district, that one, come forward to one of your frontline cities, equivalent in, you know, in one of those civilizations and the mobile way in which they attacked.
I think it's possible.
You can, directly from LUA, you can place districts.
Right.
The question is whether you can write a script that's better at placing them than the human is as far as determining what's the best place to put it.
That's the problem, right?
Yeah.
You go and you found a city with the express purpose of putting a wonder in an enclosure with a bunch of mountains. So the city is pretty much garbage in terms of its productive and food qualities, but it's going to give you so much faith and so much science over time because you're going to put this wonder right in the perfect spot. You're going to plant your city, and a stupid district shows up right in the spot that you need to put your wonder.
Maybe you could make it then in that case that the district only takes one turn to build or something and costs about one shield. Needs to be placed. It would be built sort of in one turn.
Yeah, for Axis, when you're listening to this, when you give us the ability to put in free districts, it should be a pop-up so we can place it. Thanks.
Yeah.
Now, whether people would find that fun and cool, or whether they would just say, this is the worst civilization of all time because I'm constantly losing my yields because...
Yeah, I was actually going
to
say...
It feels like it'd be a lot of work to play. You'd have to make it to where the rewards for doing that are pretty strong. Or perhaps even to where the penalties for not doing it aren't so bad. You can look at it that way.
Yeah, that always becomes the problem of design. It's not really balanced to create a civilization that when the stars are aligned, they are ridiculous. And then, you know, we're getting +5 to science because your district is next to a buffalo. But if you don't micromanage every turn and move your districts around every turn and all that, then they're worthless, right?
Yeah.
That's not a good design. That's just a civ that's both overpowered and weak at the same time.
Yeah.
And at the cost of making you tear your hair out because you accidentally put a wonder somewhere where the buffalo went.
Yeah.
The other problem you've got there is that's different to 5, is that as the game goes on, of course, all these tiles get used up with buildings, with districts, so there's not really a lot of places that the buffalo have to roam.
Well, the other thing that you could do, though, now that I'm thinking out loud and ideas are forming, which would be different and it would take the onus off of you, what if the districts moved by themselves? So the buffalo moves and all the districts hop along with it, if they're allowed to. That would give you then an anti-improvement question. If I put an improvement here or a wonder here, will it prevent me from moving my district? But instead of you actually having to destroy your district and move it, the district actually moves with the buffalo, if it's possible to. And that would give you this undeveloped, wide-open feel, but also drive you insane.
Yeah. You could, of course, be thinking of this the wrong way around, because as you've mentioned before on a previous modcast, we assume that civilization is all about building buildings, and it's not in some of those, the first civilizations, etc. It's all about the culture and everything. So maybe they do need to have something that moves around.
I mean, I'm in this situation right now where, from Firaxis and from our modding friends and partners, there has not yet been a precedent for North American First Nations or other nomads. Nobody's built a Bedouin mod. Now watch, by the time this comes out, someone will have.
Mm-hmm.
No one's built a Cree mod or a Sioux mod. So some of these more nomadic civs built their culture around the availability of animals are in the game yet. At this point, I do have the opportunity that if I got in first and created mods of this vein, then we might be able to actually have that be a thrust of here's how you do a nomadic civ.
And the thing is, I think that even if not everybody likes playing a civ that's got such a different type of gameplay, it's still worth making just because it can still fill that niche that people want to play. Not every mod has to be enjoyed by everybody.
It's true.
Yeah.
Thank goodness for that.
And I think that there's more to gain by making something that might be a little polarizing in terms of game design than something that's just so safe as far as design that it's forgettable.
Right. I think right now the biggest example of that you can point to in mods in general right now in Civilization VI would be JFD's Hitler mod. Not everybody wants to play as Hitler. Personally, I never play as Hitler. It's kind of a personal policy of mine, but I have the mod installed all the time because it's almost like finding a random boss in a different kind of video game.
Yeah.
You open up, oh, what's over top of this hill? It's Hitler. We're also starting a large amount, at least among the old Civilization crowd that are modding right now, kind of like a communal atmosphere. JFD has made leaders for Sucrit's mods. Sucrit's made leaders for JFD's mods. There's almost like this atmosphere of whoever gets the Civilization out first gets to set the baseline, and then everybody else works on top of that. Now, we'll have to see how that goes forward, because Sucrit, of course, is making high-quality mods. JFD is making high-quality mods. We haven't had a scenario where somebody comes out of left field with a really terrible mod and then expects everyone to build on top of that.
Not yet, anyway.
I'll start.
JFD's rule with Bane. Absolutely brilliant.
Absolutely.
That he's got a couple of new government slots. So we've got, like, the cultural slot and we've got the religious slot. We've got lots of new policies, new government types, and it really does make it more fascinating. So on that, that's great. So anything against it. For me personally, trying to incorporate that something like that into Anno Domini, I think it's a bit too much that you can have governments with potentially six different types of things in. So I think four is enough for me.
JFD's added some great policies. I think he needs to tear out all the old ones and replace them. The Phyraxis ones, to be honest. That's a bold move to say testing that would be a pain in the, almost untenable.
Yeah.
Right now, I never play Civ without with Faith. I start the game up and I go, where's my Faith policies?
Yeah. With the Civ 6, what I've done with Anno Domini, it hasn't been released this bit yet, is I've kept the military policies and the economic ones. I've moved the great person ones into the other zone. So the one, for example, that's a great general, plus 2 points towards, has gone to military, etc.
It should be.
I think it should be. I've moved the diplomacy ones, which there aren't that many of, into that great person slot. So it means that there won't be any governments with a specific slot. It has to be used for wildcard. And then I've used diplomacy slot as social policies, culture, religious, and also amenity type bonuses, whereas the economic one will have the other pots that aren't military, such as science, gold. So it just makes it a little bit more interesting for me personally, and of course without Jeff Deeney, we'd never have got there. I think as well, we're in that zone, aren't we, where we're reflecting back on Civ 5 and all the civilizations that we had there that we haven't yet got in Civ 6. What are your plans for any Civs or anything that you're doing in Civ 6? Is it going to reflect what happened in Civ 5? Are you starting all over from scratch?
For me personally, especially because I created a bunch of them, it's a little bit difficult right now to say. I feel like this new communal spirit that is really healthy. I was in the middle of planning a Canada when JFD released a Canada. And to me, that is just high time to say, just start making leaders for JFD's Canada. It's a little bit rough in some ways because his Canada is much more naval-oriented than I would have liked. But when I actually look at it from a very objective point of view, that's actually because Canada really is, on the world stage, a naval trade power. Being one of the only nations, other than, of course, America, that has ports on both the Atlantic and Pacific that they can work with really well, and an internal railway system that allows them to function as an interface between Pacific trade and Atlantic trade. That's certainly not unique in North America, because the United States enjoys that as well. But one of the things that I've been looking at doing is adding more leaders. I'm looking at actually creating a John A. McDonald that has a variant of the Great Wall-style wonder improvement that is a railway. On the basis of JFD's Canada, which is very much about naval trade, I would add a leader that adds land infrastructure to support that naval trade. JFD especially, but also Sucrit and Liuji, have set this tone of, you're going to play Rome, there's going to be six more leaders for Rome. Unfortunately, there's still kind of this holdover from Civilization V among some people that says, no, you can't make that mod. It's mine. You can't make this leader. He's mine. Right?
I think my current focus, once I get back into modding sometime within the next couple weeks, first I'll probably spend a little bit of time doing some bug fixing on my 5 civs, just to kind of close those out.
Okay.
And then actually have plans for doing an entire series of Final Fantasy XIV civs.
Wow.
I could probably make over a dozen civs from that game alone. That'll be for six. I made a Final Fantasy XIV civ for five, but I kind of feel like I won't be playing much of five anymore, so I don't think I'll finish the series for that.
Cool.
There's several leaders I feel like that I could make play more like I envision them to actually act in Final Fantasy XIV compared to what you can do with laborers in 5.
Yeah.
There is at least one leader that I plan on basically having him declare war on everybody as soon as he meets them.
Wow.
He's basically the embodiment of hatred and revenge. So I feel from that perspective, there's more to work with. It's going to be a little difficult to get around Lua limitations. There's something I had thought about trying when I was first playing around with modding that I never actually did get around to trying, and that I think there's an ability to actually make some cross-communication between the UI type files and the gameplay script type files.
That would be great if we managed to do that.
Because, yeah, that current divorce between those two has made a lot of things basically impossible. So while you can do more with the modifier system than you ever could with 5's XML or SQL, there's still a lot of things that I'm sure people want to try, but they're kind of hamstrung right now.
And admittedly right now, I haven't done anything in Civilization VI Lua. So I would categorize myself, you as well, Vice, and a few others in the community as people who really aggressively push the boundaries of Civilization V Lua. And right now, to me, Civilization VI Lua is just this big question mark. I haven't got in there and started when people say, oh, you can't do this. I haven't said, oh, really? Let me spend 3 afternoons trying to see if you're right. We're going to start seeing, I think, some traction as people start not having the tolerance to be told no. But that if you could overcome that divorce between the UI capabilities and the gameplay capabilities in Lua, in Civilization VI, that would be fantastic, because every time I come up with a really great idea, I do the research into the Lua. Can I totally do this? I totally can. And then I look up at the top of the screen and realize, oh, I'm in the wrong context. And that takes the wind out of your sail.
And the thing is, I understand why they did it. It's a performance thing, because Lua is a bit of a performance hog. So the reason they split those two is for better game performance, which that's better for the average user. The only people it really hurts are us modders that trying to really push boundaries like that. Many other modders, they may be able to get what they envision out of their Civ from with just the modifier system.
I know exactly what you're saying. Once you try to drop a map overlay or something into the Lua, it just got really slow. But it does seem like all the cool bits of gameplay are all inside the UI context.
Yeah, and it's just kind of that trade-off, because, you know, Civ 6 is a more demanding game than Civ 5 in terms of system requirements, and so whatever they can optimize, yeah, they had to. Thing is, the idea I had in mind for how to get around this, it probably will make things quite slow. Like, Lua scripts will probably have more of a negative impact on game performance if they do this than they did back in 5.
And that's always a challenge, is how do you make sure your mods don't just ruin the gameplay? Not the factor of, oh, you designed something bad, and therefore the game's not fun anymore, but from a perspective of your mods are actually crippling the system, and so now the game's not fun anymore.
I haven't found so far that anything I've done via LUA has really resulted in a remarkable slowdown in the game process. I'm doing a lot of if a builder builds an improvement, if a city buys a plot, improvement gets pillaged, that sort of thing, running through all the tiles that that city owns,
right,
and calculating whether or not to put in or remove dummy buildings. And I'm not really seeing much negative performance. I think you see far more negative performance when barbarians are turned on than you do from anything I'm doing from LUA.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure heavy LUA is necessarily going to be bad.
Now, of course, Civilization VI doesn't have the same hard RAM caps that Civilization V had, so it can actually use an awful lot more processing power than Civ V was even capable of doing. Many of us, I was definitely one of them, had computers that with far more processing power than Civilization V was allowed to access, and Civilization VI doesn't have that problem. 4 gigs of RAM, you're done. I think one of the other major changes, and it's a really good one when we're talking about mods, the mods that have come out from JFD or Sucrit or Liuji, is agendas.
Yes.
When you look at agendas, you can dive in there so deep. I don't think we've really seen a modder come out with a ridiculous agenda mod, but you could easily make the agendas facet of a single leader be larger than the average mod is in total in code. The depth that the agenda can go is just ridiculous.
We were talking before, weren't we, at a previous modcast about the bipolar nature of a lot of the agendas for vanilla leaders. Doesn't like sips that haven't got much gold, does like sips with a lot of gold. So rather than doing that, it sort of makes it more interesting if they can just sort of like sips that have got a lot of gold, tolerate those that haven't, but have some other dislikes as well.
One of the things that I really enjoy when playing with modded civilizations, and a number of modded civilizations, I think is something that Civilization 5 lacks, Civilization 6 has, and it actually sort of works backwards than usually you get when you have a bunch of randomization in who you're playing against. But the various different modders creating civilizations, you actually get this funny thing where who you have in your particular game really adds up to a unique playstyle every time in terms of the path towards friend peace or war. Most recently, I played a game in which, just by sort of random chance, of the 9 AI leaders that were in the game, 4 of them were protectionist towards city-states. So, in most games, having that kind of randomized pile-up is a bad thing, but in Civilization VI with the agenda system, having that sort of thing actually kind of created a new, fresh way to the game, because I realized that, wait, I got to be really careful about city-states in this game, but all these other avenues are now open to me, but if I ever try to attack a city-state, I'm going to get wiped off the face of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
With the modders that have put more time into their agendas, I really like some of Liuji's agendas. I think we mentioned that last time, as well as JFD's got, you know, some unique agendas that help you just have a different feel in every game based on how they stack up.
In the example you gave there, it's quite interesting when you have 3 or 4 that are protectionist up to the city-states, but you have quite an aggressive player such as Alexander, who normally is a nightmare to be next door to.
Right.
Once he starts attacking those city-states, the other 3 or 4 gang up on him. And it's like, well, you're left alone then, just to mind your own business, get on, build a type mentality. That can be good too. Because it seems like it's not the case always that all of a sudden everybody gangs up on you. Because of those agendas, they can set each other off.
Right.
Can just say, right, okay, I'm going to be able to have a few turns here where they're at war, we'll leave them to it, and I'll crack on with building that wonder or whatever it is I want to do.
You'll also run into a situation where, for example, if you're running JFD's Olaf from Norway,
yeah,
and Adolf Hitler and Alexander, that you actually have a whole bunch of characters that push you into war.
Yes.
They are all going to fight you if you don't go to war, so you're going to have to make sure you're always fighting someone.
Mm.
That isn't always what you'd like if you spun up Canada or Australia and you want to have a nice, good time just trading across borders. And then you realize that everybody really expects you to be swimming in the blood of your enemies.
You're going to do, say, was it the Kree you did last time and the Black Hook?
Yep.
Surely if you're going to do those, you've done the research, so it's just considering a different way that you apply that to the Civ in Sub-6.
Yeah, you'd think that. The flip side, though, is if you're going to do new leaders, you have to research all these new leaders.
Of course.
And then the other side of it is the district system actually throws a lot of that for a loop, because where you could first just kind of hand wave and say, there's a building over here somewhere. There's a building inside the city, and it does this thing. Now you actually have to start thinking more about box. Like, this is a struggle for me for the Blackfoot. In Civilization V, they have a building that represents the way their culture saw spirits in water. And so what we did was we built a building that has no maintenance cost, and when you build it, it gives you an immediate bomb of faith if you're next to a river. Well, in Civ 6, that doesn't make any sense as a building. that makes more sense as a adjacency power for a holy site, or easily make that a rule that said you get more faith if you're next to holy sites and your encampments produce more experience if both of those things are positioned next to a river. That throws out your building. Now what are you going to do?
Yeah.
But as well, that concept, it doesn't make any sense in a game in which placement in the world actually matters. One of the things that I think is very interesting is the concept of projects as well. T-Pang and I had a conversation almost half a year ago where we talked about if you made a true nomadic civilization, so we have these moving districts or whatever, how do you handle wonders, right? How do you portray this? And one of the ideas that we came up with was actually to create a wondrous project, be a project that only one person could complete. Once it's completed, it's done. And you call it a legend. Say, build a legend out of your theater district, and it would give you, for the rest of the game, a bonus. And it would take you 70 turns to build it, and if anyone else built it, then it would no longer be possible.
So like a sort of wonder.
So like a wonder, but a wonder that doesn't take up a tile, that doesn't have a physical location, but that drives your people forward. Obviously, then what you would want to do is wall off these people from building wonders, and then you wall off the other people from building legends.
Instead of having a unique building that replaces a building, you have a unique wonder that replaces a wonder, except it doesn't have any physical space on the land map.
Right. Or you chain them all back to hidden buildings, right?
Yeah.
But it's almost like this racist thing to say that Native Americans build legends. Oh, yeah, but have you ever heard of King Arthur?
Yeah.
It's not like other civilizations never built legends, never told stories around campfires, and were never rallied around the idea of a story of a legend, right? So that's the danger of going that route, and so I'm not convinced that's the way to go down it, but it's amazing that we can. The solution may be create a legends gameplay element, give it to everyone, and then give certain groups of Native Americans that are famous for their legends bonuses to creating legends.
Or the other alternative, I think, would be, where I think I would certainly love to see it, is do like what I'm doing with Anno Domini here, a sort of conversion mod. Native American First Peoples, and then you don't have to have anybody creating wonders, they can create the legends instead.
And that's always an option.
I think what we're in danger of, although are we in danger of it at all, is when you start creating new systems, we may have another one or two expansion packs from Firaxis so who knows what other systems they run going to bring in. Having just so much complexity in the game.
Right.
It's going to be too much, almost. We're going to talk a little bit about what we'd like the tools to be on any forthcoming patches or DLCs or expansion packs. Any thoughts about what you feel we could do?
Yeah, something to make the art creation a little less obscure as far as how to cook the assets and how to take the stuff that's in the asset pack, previewer, whatever thing is called, and actually get them into a mod without all these abstruse and confusing procedures that you currently have to go through.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you look on the various forums, whether it's Reddit or CSC, that's probably the most common issue is, okay, I got all these assets from Asset Previewer, but I keep running into this error. I can't get it to actually create the art assets into my mod.
Yeah.
I've got a friend who is an aspiring 3D artist. He wants to work on some civilization building, stuff like that. I've only got this one problem. He uses 3ds Max, and he hates Blender. So I've been poking around, hey, can you use 3ds Max? Everyone says, great, yes, you can, but you have to import everything through Blender. And I'm like, oh, I think I'm going to have to learn Blender so I can import his assets, because he won't touch the thing. More straightforward way that you could just say, I have this file and I want it in the game.
Yeah.
Even to the point of, I want to take the existing unit animation tank, and I want to call it a Panzerflungen Lurkenflurktur, and I just want to use that animation.
You're making a Sweden mod,
with the new icon, without having to go through 900 steps to get that duped. Like we could in Civ 5, where we could just say, art def tank, boom, we're done.
Yeah.
Except that it was never that easy, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah, but other than the, you know, reworking the icon and stuff, but currently in Civ 6, it's like, once you've done it and figured it out, it apparently gets easy, but man, I just keep running up against, like, wow, this is not intuitive at all.
By the way, folks, this fall, look for Lee's upcoming Sweden mod featuring the Swedish chef, the Panzer Glufin Flurbin board, and the Vord Imported Distork and Corkin district.
It's going to be fun. One to look forward to. So, we've got the art assets then. Yeah, definitely. I think that there should be an easier way to put them in. And certainly after the weekend I've had, you know, something that's really straightforward. The hours that I've spent trying to figure it out is just unbelievable. So, that's one thing. I'd like a unit creator.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was headed with the issue of art animation. A unit creator would be nice because you just tell it, okay, use this stuff over there that's already been defined. Just duplicate that for me.
Yeah. Right. And I think, like, we had Deliverator on the last modcast, didn't we? And he was explaining how he did it, and he's put some tutorials on Sifanatics. But for somebody like me who isn't quite familiar with some of the processes, and, you know, it just doesn't seem as easy.
I'm just such a text kind of a guy that as soon as they start saying, then you open this program and wiggle the cursor around and do this and grab that, and all those art tutorials just, wow, what language is this written in?
Yeah. I think the one thing that Civ 6 is certainly doing is intelligent guys just feeling very dumb. You know, just looking at it and thinking, you know, I can do this. But then, you know, about 5 hours later, tried everything, including switching the PC on and off just in case, just in one. And it may be just something that's not written anywhere that you've got to guess that you've got to do. It's frustrating.
The other thing that, and I think I've mentioned this in previous casts, is that a modifier builder, I guess, you know, so that if you want to add a Civ trait that this guy's recon units cross rivers without penalty, you can do that in the modifiers. But it's a lot of work trolling through and figuring out which collection you need. Is there a dynamic modifier that already exists that does this? How do I specify that? A helper tool to work out your XML or SQL, whichever way you want to do it, for the dynamic modifier system would help too.
Yeah.
It would be a nice thing. It's something that we may actually be able to build ourselves.
I think, of course, just linking back to Citrata and JFD, yep, and Luigi. You think, right, these guys have done it, so how do I do it? Oh, shit, they did it in SQL. Great. And then you just try to work out, well, it seems to be an XML, then I can do it.
Speaking of SQL, one of the things that I really would love them to do, now that I think this would be a more of a code thing than a tool thing, but I would like the ability to define my own collections. You've got this concept in mods of collections.
Yes.
And they have all your cities, all your units. And you can tie into them, but specifically for agendas, I would love to be able to define, hopefully with some sort of a SQL query or something, some way of saying these characters, especially for the diplomatic things, religious leaders, let's say religious leaders is a thing, or one that I wanted to do, which is right now downright impossible unless I want to manually hard code a list. I had the idea of a Inuit leader, not the one that's in Civ 5, but a different one. And I was looking into his legends about him, and there was this pattern of him fighting people to defend women. I was like, that should be great. I'm going to cheese him up a little bit. I want to make him a kind of a chauvinistic hero. He's going to ally himself with all the women in the game, and he's going to declare war on any man who declares war on a woman. And then he tells you about his agenda like they always do every, you know, 20 or so turns. He calls you up and says, I like this, whatever. If you're a woman, he's going to say things like, you know, isn't it great that there's a strong man around to help you? You know, he's going to be the ultimate kind of chauvinistic kind of guy, right?
Yeah.
There's actually no way in the game right now to determine which leaders are women. There is a gender tag, but for the purposes of writing an agenda, there's no collection for that. So I can't get that information into a workable state for defining an agenda.
Right.
So if I could actually create collection women, collection men, and define those things as queries so that every time I run the game, it's going to see who's in the game and get that information into a package that I can use, that would be fantastic. You could use it for all sorts of things. Maybe you want an agenda where somebody doesn't like people who don't have unique units or whatever.
Honestly, the main thing I want done right now is the ability to just add sound, because right now it's not working, and just adding that would be a whole lot of difference in my opinion.
Yep, I would agree.
Or we're missing on stuff like Donovan narrations, voice leaders, and of course, Civ music.
Yep. I think what's actually happened is Firaxis has intentionally not allowed Civ music so that we don't break all the copyrights we did in Civ 5.
It seems like Firaxis intended for it to be doable, they just didn't get the implementation quite right. They just need some more information, and then it should be coming in some patch.
Going to a patch near you.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Calling today, in North America the number is 301-637-7659. In Europe, 44121-288-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Modcast, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
It would be nice for something like Anno Domini, where you could specify that if Anno Domini is active, then no other mod can be active except for the Firaxis DLC, because it's a total conversion.
Yes, and anything connected with Anno Domini. Because... Yeah. I mean, like, for example, just using that as an example, then, somebody's asked on Systematics, why is it that more units doesn't work with it? Well, more units has riflemen and tanks. So, well, I used it with it and it just didn't work. Well, it won't, because, you know, there's no tanks in the ancient world. Just if you take getting a new government picture in, but for a new type of government, it's easy enough to get the file and the file size and save it and everything. But the actual government ones are hard-coded. So you've got to have government underscore and then the government name for the actual name of the image. But you've also got to amend the Lua to accept .dds, otherwise it won't work. And it's like, well, if you don't know that, it's easy when you know, but I have to be told.
Right.
You know what I mean? So there's a few things that I think could be a lot better there, and hopefully they'll pick that up in a future patch, or indeed an expansion if there is one.
I'd be very surprised if there isn't.
Yeah, I think I would be shocked if there wasn't at least two.
Yeah, and I mean, I did hear a lot of comments from people when the game first came out saying, well, this game is half-baked, or it seems like parts of it were rushed. And I was like, you got to realize that they developed, in whatever their scope of time was for Civilization VI, everything that they had worked on in Civilization V, save for the UN, and those facets, when they built the original game, I mean, they built that even after the initial development of Civilization V. Those initial systems were years of work. There were years between Gods and Kings coming out and Brave New World coming out, so they didn't have the luxury of spending 2 years working on tourism.
Yeah.
They made a major change with districts and district adjacencies. I mean, that's a big chunk of code you have to add in there.
Yeah, and all the things that buildings are from, things that make it a lot easier to program rather than using Lua for built-in as well. So, you know, there's a lot that was done. That's it for Modcast 72. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob, RATechFT. Joining me today were...
Vice Virtuoso.
Nerai the Forgiven.
Yes.
Thank you, guys. And thanks, everyone. See you next time.
And Rob says, hi, seems my mic isn't working all of a sudden. Well, we'll just do the Rob can't be here episode, so let's talk nasty about Rob.
This is being recorded, though, so we can't talk too nasty.
Oh, well, okay.
Hello, can you hear me now?
We can hear you now.
Fantastic. I just needed to switch off and switch on again.
I tried a little bit of the Lua interface modding back in Civilization V, and it was the scariest thing I'd ever done.
Yeah.
And it came out looking like it was drawn by somebody in the third grade.
Yeah.
That's actually probably a nasty slam on people in the third grade.
Probably.
we shouldn't have the Great Admiral that gives an ironclad and a dominic.
Oh, do we? I've still got that, have I?
Yeah, right, that's
important. I'm not sure, I'm just saying.
You should not have to have, actually, to be honest. Or alternatively, you know, I forget what I was just going to say, because I was saying alternatively. I don't know what Dan will make of this modcast. We've had quite a few rambles, haven't we, along the way?
We'll just call it the Rye Rambles Over.
That's how it normally is, isn't it?
Yeah. Well,
I think Dan removes half of what I say, and it's better for that.
Well, 3/4, probably.
Record date July 15th, 2017.
Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips. Copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.